Thanks for joining us for another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni. On today's episode, Jeff joins Pat and I to talk about organizational culture and values. But before we jump in, I wanted to let you all know that we recently redesigned and released our brand new website, www.tablegroup.com. As you know from listening to the podcast, our goal is to help make work more fulfilling and organizations more effective. So everything we did in this redesign is to better serve leaders, team leaders, and managers, and even frontline employees to really thrive at work. So we'd love it if you went to the website and took a look around. There are products and tools and resources that will help you implement the things that we talk about on this podcast. And if you can't find what you need, please reach out to us or give us a call. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni. We are here today with Cody Thompson, my co-host.
How's it going, Pat?
And Jeff Gibson, our head of consulting.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
How you doing, Jeff? This is, by the way, the podcast where we talk about anything having to do with the world of work, from leadership to teamwork to organizational health, anything at all that has to do with our jobs and the way we work, because we believe that work should be dignifying and that the healthiest organizations are the ones that succeed.
Absolutely.
What do you got me talking about today?
So we're still in the context of our clarity questions, right? Yep. So we covered why do you exist, question number one. Today we're going to be talking about values.
Right. Values. Something that everybody now has. You can't find a company without a statement of values.
Somewhere on the wall, somewhere in their building.
On a t-shirt somewhere.
I actually think, though, I remember when this became a trend, because I was working at a company called Sybase. It was a technology company, and a book came out called Built to Last.
Great book.
Yes. Jerry Porras, Jim Collins. Most people don't know Jerry Porras. He was a Stanford professor. Jim Collins, a great author and researcher. They wrote a book called Built to Last, and one of the things that book said is this: if you want your company to last, to endure, you have to have values. And so everybody went out to get some.
They all went out and got some values.
Yeah, they went out and rented a conference room, got a flip chart, some smelly pens, and a thesaurus, and came up with 20 words to describe their values.
Yep.
And of course, what happened is a few years later, the only thing that happened was mostly a bunch of cynicism from employees and customers who looked at these words and said, that's not true.
This doesn't represent us at all, right?
Right.
Who thought that up?
Exactly. Yeah. But they had been engraved in Lucite or on t-shirts or on posters. So people said, well, we're going to stick with this stuff. So when we went into business, we kind of realized that if we were going to help our clients come up with values, we had to figure out what was wrong and why they had become so misused. And going back and looking through Built to Last and working with our clients and looking at what was going wrong, we think we figured it out. And it was that actually there's more than one kind of value. And the most important kind is what we call core values, which makes sense. Two or three things that are just absolutely endemic to a culture. It's what's true. And you should never make a decision, hire a person, or do anything that violates those values. That's a core value.
Right. And that's probably what he was trying to get at. And it was true that companies that really do have values that are meaningful and actually represent the culture of the company would help that company endure. But so many of the people that went out and got the thesaurus or tried to throw some words on a t-shirt, they weren't real values.
Right. They didn't want to say no to anything.
Right. It was any good word. We'll just adopt that.
Because if they said no to it, they're saying to their employees, that's not us.
Right.
Right.
You know, right. And the truth is you have to be willing to do that.
Yeah.
When we talk about core values at the Table Group, I like to say you should be really intolerant of people and situations that don't have those core values. Now, if you had 12 of those, you're going to be intolerant of most people and most situations.
Yeah, right.
But that's why there should be two or three. Yeah. And you should say, gosh, if this potential employee doesn't have that value, as talented as they are, as wonderful as they might be, they don't fit here.
One of the phrases that I've heard you say before, Pat, is, I mean, if it's misconstrued, it could be a little controversial, but values are the limits of diversity in a company that exist.
In a world where everybody says, we should be diverse, it's like, yes, you should be diverse around lots of things, but not those two or three things.
Right.
Now, so before we get into that, I think it's important to recognize, so if core values are only one of four different kinds of values, we better understand the others so we can sift out those. Mm-hmm. And we'll probably be left with our core values.
So let's do that.
All righty. Yeah. So I wrote an article for the Harvard Business Review. I'm not bragging because it's the only article I've ever written for the Harvard Business Review. And it took longer than it took most of my books to write. It was very complicated and a difficult process, but it was called Make Your Values Mean Something. Is that right?
Yeah.
And this was, goodness gracious, this was like 17 years ago that we wrote this.
Yeah.
And I still hear people come up and go, hey, I used that article. Somebody said they read it once a year or something, which is interesting. So basically the premise of it is this, you don't have to pay $6 to read it. And that's that there's actually four kinds of values. In addition to core, which are most important, there's one called aspirational, which is, wow, that's not true. We wish it were. We aspire to have that value. So let's call it aspirational and go for it. But let's not pretend that it already exists, because then we're going to look silly.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff, you represent our first aspirational value at the table group, because you're pretty new here. You've only been here 20 years?
Only 20.
Only 20. Yeah. And so 20 years ago, when we hired Jeff, our core values were the same ones they are today: humble, hungry, and smart, which became a book called The Ideal Team Player. But one of our values was not professional. I'm not particularly professional, dot all the I's and cross the T's and present things. I would go to an offsite with a client and just make it up on the whiteboard. And we were like, maybe we should have a binder or a logo.
It was pretty effective, I have to admit, though, Pat. Let's acknowledge that at least.
Well, thank you, Jeff. So when we hired you, we said, first of all, he has to have the core values. But it would be great if he brought with him something that we need, which is professionalism. And you had worked at Deloitte and your Myers-Briggs type had that. And you were a very professional guy. You had your stuff together. And we said, wow, that would be great. He's going to bring one of our aspirational values and we want him to infect us with that. But companies sometimes make the mistake of going out and hiring that professional person who doesn't have your core values. And that doesn't work.
Right.
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 And then things got a little too professional and you hired me.
That's right. We said, hey, we got to temper Jeff. Let's go get Cody. Let's lower the level of professional.
Well, and of course, the problem we have when clients talk about it, they might say, hey, we need to be more professional, but they don't communicate the nuance that our core values are still these. We just need to inject this into the organization right now because of market forces, a strategic need, whatever it might be.
Exactly. We're not pretending that. And I say to people today, professionalism still isn't our core value, but we need to do that in order to succeed in our market, which we are glad to do.
Right. And that's why it's so important to say that the core values represent what is true, because on some level, anything can be an aspirational value. And you get in so much trouble as an organization when you put those out there, and then the people internally, the employees know that they're not true. And then the customers certainly know that they're not true.
Right.
Because every good word you could go, integrity, all the words that you can think of that you'd like to be true about you. But when it's not, that's a huge violation and undermines the whole process.
So I remember when my kids were born at the same high. In fact, what a story. It's good that you're on here. Jeff's son, Timmy, was born 9 days before my twins.
Yep.
In the same hospital, same doctor delivered them. We didn't even know each other. It was 2 years later that we would hire Jeff, but our kids were born in the same hospital. So you remember that well, Jeff.
Absolutely.
And I was going down, up and down the elevators at John Muir Hospital, which is a great place. And I think they've addressed this. They're a fabulous hospital.
Fantastic.
But I remember looking on the wall. So this was 21 years ago. And they had a thing that said, these are our core values, or at least our values, in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And I rode that elevator a lot of times because we were in the hospital for a couple months. And it said quality, innovation, customer care, integrity, sustainability, respect, quality, patient safety, diversity, and hard work. Something like that. All of those. And I thought, well, they're never going to be able to hire anybody because who has all of those? Right.
Little intimidating.
But that was that era where you just said, let's put everything up there. Let's cover all of our bases so that we're not exposed, because employees, and they needed to go back and say, some of those are aspirational, some are core.
Mm-hmm.
And some, let's talk about the third kind of value, which is permission to play. Jeff, what's permission to play?
I think permission to play are the ones that are most often confused with core.
Right.
Because these are the ones that frankly just exist in most organizations. There's not a lot of companies that don't say they value integrity.
Yeah, they're kind of generic.
Yeah, kind of generic. They're important. They're not things, you're not necessarily going to differentiate yourself because of your permission to play values, but you're also not going to hire people that are violating them because they're things that most people generally want in employees.
So you don't put them on your t-shirt. You just say, yes, integrity is important. Jeff, you and I worked for a client once.
We did.
That insisted on integrity being one of their core values. And we were like, no, I don't think so. You shouldn't have too many. And I'm not sure you guys, we said to make it a core value, it means you have to have more of it than all of your competitors. In fact, in your industry, people should look at every client in the industry and say, that's one of the most high integrity companies I've ever worked with.
And you have to be willing to do things to demonstrate that it's so true.
Even when it hurts you.
Absolutely.
And I think Jim Collins talks about that in Built Class and Jerry Porras. So we tried to convince them that it wasn't a core value. They argued with us. I mean, they argued hard.
For quite some time.
Yeah.
This was a lengthy conversation, actually.
Yeah, not even amazing. In one meeting.
Right.
And a couple meetings later, a few weeks later, maybe even a month later, we're sitting in a meeting and somebody says, hey, you know, we need to find out who our competitors are working with. And somebody said, I think we should go into a dumpster outside their headquarters and see if we can find their phone records.
Oh my.
And they were seriously considering it, which I don't know if that's technically illegal. It's certainly not high integrity. And that's the day I think we said, and they were like, okay, we could take that one off.
Well, do you remember the other suggestion that they had was maybe we could start to interview our competitor salespeople and see who they're talking to.
Yeah, pretend that we're going to hire them even though we're not and just say who's on your list of people you're working with.
Right. And that's when we raised our hand. Guys, you said integrity is a core value. And I was like, well, everybody's doing this. So it's actually okay.
That's incredible. I mean, can you imagine? That sounds like a made up story. The fact that someone would sit across the table and say integrity. And maybe we should also dig through our competitors' trash.
Right.
You know?
Well, and what's interesting, just to shoot fish in a barrel here, and that is to think about the company that had integrity on their website as one of their core values, which was
Enron. Yeah.
Now, I think it's too easy to shoot fish in a barrel and go, Enron. Enron was not populated by horrible people.
Not at all. Yeah.
They had some people way at the top who did some things wrong and were skating on the edge of what was right and what was wrong and went way over that edge. But it's easy to go, everybody that worked there was terrible. Not true. Many of the executives even that worked there were not. But there were things that were going on there that violated that. What in the world were they thinking when they put integrity on their list of core values?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
You know what I think they were thinking? Gee, if we put this on here, maybe it'll keep us from going over that line too far.
Hmm.
Which is not the reason you put a core value.
No.
It's something you believe in so much that you are willing to do things even at your own expense. What's a good example of a company doing something at its own expense because of its core values?
Well, I mean, one of the companies that we always love talking about within the organization as well as on the podcast is Southwest Airlines.
Right.
And, you know, Southwest Airlines has three really strong, really clear core values.
Right.
And
let's say what they are.
So one of them, servant's heart. You know, they serve with heart. And you can just see that in the people that they
work
with.
That's why a flight attendant will get on her or his hands and knees and clean up a sick baby's on a plane. It's like, because I'm a servant's heart and this mother is really struggling.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not in my job description, a servant. That's why a pilot will go help people clean the plane, regardless of what the union rules say. They're like, they need my help. I'm going to serve.
That's what they'll do. Second one is warrior spirit. They work hard. You know, but, you know, using the word warrior, just, you can just see, it's like, oh, that's so Southwest-like.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know,
that's the other thing. They use words, and companies should use words that actually evoke something meaningful for them rather than saying teamwork, customer service.
It's not over generic.
Right.
Yeah. And then the last one is fun loving, and they spell it L-U-V-ing because that's their tick on the stock exchange. And that's really Southwest. They're the servant heart, warrior spirit, fun loving people. And they do crazy things to demonstrate that. Everything from how they celebrate Halloween in their corporate office and out there at all the gates to how they're all wearing their jerseys of their favorite football teams during the NFL season to lots of different stories. And I know there's one in particular that you're thinking of.
In the hiring process.
Yeah. That would be great to demonstrate.
Yeah. So they decided that they wanted to make sure that they were hiring fun-loving pilots. Pilots. So these are people that are flying planes that are worth, you know, I don't know, $300 million. And safety is very important. So it'd be very easy for them to go, it doesn't matter if a person has a fun-loving attitude. No, they said everybody has to. So when they're interviewing their pilots, we had a friend who used to do it. They used to do this thing where they would ask them halfway through the interview process, go down to the company store and put on some khaki shorts, which is what their flight attendants wear. And you're going to be interviewing the rest of the day in your khaki shorts, along with your knee socks and your wingtips and your suit and tie, whatever, mostly guys from the Air Force and stuff like that. They have plenty of female pilots too. And some of the pilots would say, that is ridiculous and unprofessional. I'm gone. Hmm. And they were like, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because they said, we would rather lose a candidate, a good pilot who doesn't fit the culture, than get them through this and change the rules. Now, Jeff, I think the other thing you're talking about is the pilot that got naked?
Well, I wasn't going to go to that one, but now that you said it, you kind of have to explain it, right? I
don't even know. We've been told this before, but
we haven't heard it from them directly.
No, this is an urban myth about a pilot who said, be funny. And so a pilot had coffee spilled on him, evidently, in the cockpit. And he said, you know what would be funny? He took off all of his clothes and said, I'm going to sit here naked. And then when they come back in, I'll ask for more coffee. And somebody came in, they're like, oh my gosh. And he got suspended, I think. Yeah, I did. But you know, the executive was like,
probably fired.
Oh boy, that wasn't good. Yeah. I guess they took it a bit too far, but I guess that's what's going to happen when you have a funny culture.
Yeah.
Well, they don't endorse that, but.
And you know, you started by saying like that you will commit to valuing this behavior or this core value, even if it costs you something. And the other great side to that story around the fun loving attitude is when the flight attendant was doing the safety debriefing, remember?
Right.
And so they go through the entire safety debriefing. If you've been on a Southwest flight, they try to make it uniquely there. So you'll hear them make jokes. And on this particular flight, I think someone said, you know, and in case of a water landing, we'll be serving drinks with umbrellas in them, you know, and did the necessary safety debriefing, but added some humor in there. And one of the customers, the Southwest customer who was on that flight, wrote a letter to the president, right?
Herb Kelleher, the founder. Yeah.
And said, you know, essentially, I don't think this is a laughing matter. I think that safety is so important that if you don't change your practices on how you deliver this content in the air, then I'm not going to fly Southwest. And on any other company, especially when you're talking about values, this is how you know it's true. When it comes down to losing customers, you can sometimes fold, right? They can back off.
Yeah.
And Herb wrote a very short letter that said, we'll miss you.
Right.
And that's where like the rubber really meets the road, right? It's when you are willing to risk those pilots that will walk out because they think it's beneath them, or customers who will walk away from giving you money for your product because it doesn't match up with your core values. And you say, okay,
that's not who we are. What they don't realize is for every person you lose because of your values, you gain 10 others.
Absolutely.
I mean, and I think about like Nordstrom. I mean, and one of Nordstrom's values, and we've had the privilege of working with them, is customer obsessed. And they've recently added one for clarification called we extend ourselves. But customer obsessed means 1 year, somebody came into a store and said, with a tire, and they said, I want to return this tire. Well, everyone knows Nordstrom doesn't sell tires. And they said, well, I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on. He goes, well, it says you'll take back anything. There used to be a tire shop in this building. I bought my tire here. I want you to return to take it back. And you know what they did? That employee refunded their money and took the tire back. Now, I'm sure the executives weren't like, hey, that's a great policy. Let's tell everybody to bring back their tires. But in this case, they said it went too far, but we're not going to punish them, because when you have a real core value, it's sometimes going to be inconvenient. And you got to say, but that's proof that we believe this.
Right.
And that became a great story. It became something that their employees rallied around. And to this day, it's like, do wonderful things for your customers. It serves us in the long run.
And when you have those stories, I mean, that's how you talk about your core values. That's
not policy.
That's how you bring them to life, is to have an employee tell a new employee that this was what happened. And we have another client, big technology company. Every year, the CEO gets up and tells the exact same speech. And in that speech, he's reinforcing what their core values are. And he's even had executives come up to him and said, can you do something new this year? And to the same people. They're hiring.
Right.
And he's like, no, I think we're going to continue to do the same thing.
Absolutely.
Year after year after year.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. That's the thing that makes one company different than another. It's a competitive advantage. The people live their values, which is way more important than a policy manual.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
The values let people make decisions for themselves rather than just have a policy manual. One of my favorite set of core values is a company. They're called Cambridge Engineering. And what a fabulous company. We never worked with them. They figured this out without our help. They've read our books and they've read others, and they're just a great company. And it's in Missouri. And their two core values are unconditional love and high expectations.
Yeah, it's incredible. And there's a YouTube video. I'll say this, go online and search Cambridge Engineering, because it's their entire executive team, or a good portion of their executive team, talking about what this means to them.
Right.
And they're so convinced, you know, they talk about, sometimes we give people a second chance, sometimes we give people a third chance. We use the word family around here. And so we have high expectations for everyone here. But when we fail, we gather around each other and we pick each other up and we push forward.
Right.
You know, and it's unconditional love and high expectations.
Now, if a person doesn't have high expectations, they're not going to fit there.
Right.
And if they can't give others unconditional love, they're not going to fit there. And that's the thing about values. Not everybody belongs in every company. And if you're not rejecting, and I don't mean doing it in a cruel way, but if you're rejecting no one or rejecting no opportunities because of your values, then they're not real.
Absolutely. Or if that rejection in a certain sense is happening shortly after they're hired and they realize, wow, I'm way over my head. I didn't really believe that Nordstrom was really obsessed with customers, but these guys are crazy about customers.
Exactly.
I probably should go work somewhere else.
I remember probably 17 years ago working with Southwest when we first met them, maybe a little bit longer. And one of the things they said is, we're concerned that our retention rate isn't high enough. And of course it was like 96%. It was ridiculous, but they were concerned. That's how they are. And they said, and the thing is, people are leaving quickly after they start. And we were like, that's good. That means some people are getting through the process. They begin working, they realize they don't fit, and they're opting out on their own. Hmm. That's a very, very healthy thing.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the kind of clients that we work with that really struggles with values, and understandably so, are churches. And I know, Jeff, you do, and I do. We all work with a lot of churches.
Yeah.
And sometimes they go, well, our values are just, like, if it's a Christian church, Jesus made it clear what our values are, which is true. But one church can have a different set of core values around what it means to work there than others. And you work with one, and tell us about that one.
I do. One of the clients I work with is Menlo Church. It's a large Bay Area, in the San Francisco Bay Area based church. And when we're thinking about core values, we're thinking about their employees. So they have a relatively large employee base, and they identified three values. They are humble. You know, it's not about themselves. They are servants. They are hopeful. You know, they're thinking about like what we can actually do, and they are gritty. You know, they actually get stuff done, roll up their sleeves, are committed and work hard. And they're going to be different than another church down the street.
And that's the thing. And that's okay. What happens is, in a church or any other company, people will hear that and go, we should be gritty. We should be hopeful. Mm-hmm. We should. And it's like, no. Figure out what is true about your organization, your church, and make that clear. Because just because an employee wants to work at a church doesn't mean they belong at any church. And there's going to be some people that go, I'm a really hopeful and gritty person. That'd be a great church.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody else would be, I'm a little more cautious and concerned with quality and standards and operational effectiveness. There's going to be another church for you.
Absolutely.
If you don't have core values, you're just going to go, do you like Jesus? Do you like our church? Welcome. Come work here. Mm-hmm. And then when you have to let them go, you feel terrible.
Well, I think it's important in those types of organizations, say, again, these are about our employees. These aren't about the people who are attending the church. That's a whole different kind of conversation.
Exactly.
And so we have to focus, when we focus on core values, sometimes we confuse them with like a strategic decision that we need to make around being operationally efficient or excellent or something like that. And we just have to avoid that confusion. Otherwise, we can get really mixed up.
Absolutely. Well,
the other thing that's really interesting here is that it's the combination. The reason you pick three or four is because you want all of them, right? You have to have all of them.
You got
to
be
by that,
X.
I mean, when you're bringing someone into the organization, not like, oh, this person's humble. They'd missed out on, you know, on the hopeful and the grittiness. Oh, let's bring them in. And with Cambridge Engineering, the high expectations and unconditional love, there's probably a lot of people out there that really exhibit unconditional love, but don't have that second piece, the high expectations. And so when a lot of people talk about culture, it really does come down to values. But the reason it's so nuanced, and the reason that every company looks at a little different, is because it's about the combination of all of them.
Yeah, you have to be 3 for 3 or 4 for 4, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. If you have 12, 12 for 12 is pretty,
absolutely. You're narrowing your employee likelihood of getting anyone.
So we've talked about three different kinds of values. Core is the most important kind. We don't want to confuse that with aspirational, because aspirational is something we wish we had, but we don't. So we're going to try to work it in there, but it's never going to be core. Mm-hmm. Permission to play are just pretty much standards that somebody has to get over, a relatively low bar.
Like, I don't steal from people. You're like, oh, great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's integrity.
That's an easy value.
You value teamwork.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Have you ever been convicted of a crime? Convicted? No.
Welcome aboard. Yeah,
that's from Bill Murray, I think, Stripes, if I remember correctly. But, and then the fourth kind of value we have to be really careful of, it's different. It's, we call it accidental. And that's a value that's actually in your organization, but you shouldn't have it in. Mm-hmm. But it's crept in over time, and it's actually limiting your ability to hire people and to make decisions, because it wasn't good. It's just true. Mm-hmm. And like, lots of organizations at our company, at one point we had an accidental value, Cody. You weren't here during this time, but we were all pretty much the same age when we started the company, which means we all started having kids about the same time. There was a time we looked around and said, everybody in here has toddlers, which is like, oh, that's great. We bond around that. But we were like, well, I think we're only sourcing for people that have toddlers and our age. There's older people and younger people and people who don't want to talk about poo-poo all day that we should hire. And we had lost that sense that we had actually pretended, like, without realizing it, not pretended, but accidentally fell into the trap of thinking that's what we had in common.
Hmm. And this is the danger. I think a lot of companies, as they uncover this work, it's like when they talk about their culture, I think there's a real danger companies, even in Silicon Valley, that they have accidental value of like age and people that are like them. And so that's something to be really cognizant of and be aware of, because those can really repel people that should be there. And it also means that you're not being incredibly intentional about what you are choosing to be intolerant of.
Well, it's not just about repelling people. It's actually missing out on good people that might not fit that thing. Because I've come across investment firms that realize they're only recruiting from 2 or 3 schools across the country. Hmm. And that's not what they wanted. They had clear core values and they needed to reinforce those. And they were just getting these specific traits. And it was just too narrow of a pool for them to really be effective.
That's right. You know, we once worked with a company. It was a relatively young company. It was in the fashion industry, but they made products for young girls, older women. A big part of their customer base was in the Midwest. And yet they were located in San Francisco, south of Market, in kind of a funky area. And we helped them with their startup and with their values. And they had these really good values. And then one day we didn't work with them for like a year. We went back and we walked in their warehouse and their design studio where all the executives sat. And they were playing like funky dance music. Everybody seemed to be wearing black. They were all about the same age. And we were like, what happened to your culture? And they're like, what do you mean? It's like, well, did funkiness become one of your four values? They said, why? I don't see any non-funky. Do these people really relate to your customers? And they were like, oh no. We started sourcing from our friends and we developed a culture that we didn't really want, and it's not going to serve us. So we have to actually guard against and eliminate accidental values. We have to understand that permission to play values are just lower standards of things that people have to qualify for just to even get an interview. And we have to realize that aspirational values are something we're trying to be, but core values are the ones that we have to demand that everyone has them there. And we have to demand that we make decisions that honor those.
So let me ask you guys a question, because both of you are in rooms with leadership teams that to help them determine what these are. So if I'm a listener, a business owner, executive team member, leadership team member, whatever, and we're not sure what they are, how do you go about helping sort through what are the core values? What are the ones that are true about us? Like, what advice would you give someone who wants to further codify those?
Well, one of the things we do, Jeff, you can talk to this, is about how we deconstruct their best employees.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Assuming an organization doesn't have values, and even if they do, this is a really good healthy exercise for them to do, is ask them to think about the best people in their organization and to identify a handful of folks that they would clone and hire 50 times over to do anything in the company, regardless of skill set.
And we'll ask the team to do that. And they usually come up with 3 or 4 of the same names across the organization.
Yeah, incredible, like Mary, overlap.
Fred and John.
And then we'll ask them, like, what is it about Mary, Fred, and John that put them on that list? What are the attributes that define them and make them a unique fit here?
And we make them write those down instead of talk about it. We're like, write down the 5 or 6 things about Mary, Fred, and John that you love.
Silently. So then, and all of a sudden we come up with this list of things where there's an incredible amount of overlap. We're like, oh, I think we're kind of centering around this. And then after we've done that, the next thing we do is really interesting, is we say, what about those people in the organization that have left the organization? Not because they were a bad person, but they just didn't fit culturally.
Right.
Who are some of those folks? Or frankly, you kind of wish would leave.
Yeah. Maybe. Sometimes it's like, they might be still working here and you all wish they leave, but you haven't had the courage to let them go yet. But what is it about them?
Exactly. And so now you kind of have a Venn diagram with 2 overlapping circles. And that's really helpful to narrow it up. But the last thing you have to do is ask yourself, okay, leadership team, are those attributes that we're talking about, are those true of you as well? Because the last thing you want to do as a leadership team is go out to your company and say, these are our core values, and they're nowhere near true. And your employees are gonna be like, you just lost all credibility with us.
I once worked with a company. You remember this company, Jeff? It was a startup, but a lot of employees, lots of money over in the Silicon Valley. So I was working with the executive team about the values, and we put the great employees up there, and they said, they're so friendly. These are some of the most friendly, warm-hearted people. That's why they're on the list. And I said, what about the people that left? Not friendly. They were really cold and not friendly. Okay. And it got kind of quiet. I said, what about you guys, to the executives? And it was quiet. And I said to them, you guys don't seem that friendly to me. I like you and all, but, and they were like, we're not friendly at all. We're not very warm. And they realized that can't be one of our core values because we don't embody it. And in fact, I think they valued the employees who embodied it because it meant they didn't have to. So putting that on their t-shirt would have basically just been an announcement of their hypocrisy.
Wow.
Yeah. And they needed to realize, oh, we have to naturally, the people that run this organization, if we're not living that, it's not true. Yeah.
That's such an important point to hammer home, which is that it comes from the top. That the culture of the organization, the holders of the culture are the executive team leader.
It does. And what's also true about it is that these values, they already exist in your company, even if you've not named them, because you've been selecting great employees for some reason. Let's just figure out what it is and codify it and now start to reinforce it in all different ways throughout the organization.
Southwest didn't start and say, what would we like our values to be? They said, what do we already see? Now let's put language around that that makes it easy for people to remember and have handles on.
Well, and what I love about how Southwest did it, and I encourage all of my clients to do, is make these unique to you. You know, rather than saying customer service, they say servant's heart, because that's just more, it's more definitional for them, if that's actually a word I can
use. And at Nordstrom, it's customer obsessed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nuanced to fit their particular. I'm sure that our, you know, humble, hungry, smart. I'm sure that there are other companies that talk about humility or hunger, but the way that we talk about it is nuanced. You know, it means something to us, even if it's a fraction of a difference than it does to another company down the road.
Yes, and the reason why at the table group it's okay that we used slightly more generic words, although I think at the time they weren't as much, is because there was 11 of us in the office and we could each define these things and know what we meant by them. When you have 5,000 employees or 500 employees and you're not going to have the opportunity to constantly define it, you need more descriptive words that don't sound like it's generic.
Yeah, I mean, I have a client that's a very technical software oriented company, and they created one of their core values they named was craftsmanship. Right. Craftsmanship. Who would have thought that would have come out of a technology company? They're like, no, we're crafting something new. We want all of our employees to think they're creating something. They're building something special and unique, and it's just it's so different than just like, hey, we're really focused on building good stuff.
Yeah. You know? That's great.
It's really important.
It is. Yeah. You know, I think I want to do a commercial right now. Ah. And this is a company, I don't have their values offhand because I have not had a chance to work with their executive team, but they're very strong on their values. And one of them is passion for saving lives, is a company called Be the Match. And I had a chance to be at a conference and speak there, and one of our consultants works with them. Be the Match is the place where anyone that needs a bone marrow transplant, and there's a heck of a lot more of them than I had thought, they are the clearinghouse for those. They're the ones that know where the people are that have the right bone marrow and connect them and make sure that people get the bone marrow transplant they need so they can save their lives or change their lives drastically. And I want to do a commercial for them because, first of all, it's a fabulous organization. Their CEO and their leadership team is totally committed to building a healthy organization. Most importantly, there are people in this world that there's a limited number of people that have bone marrow to give. Mm-hmm. And they are trying to grow that number by getting more and more people to do a simple swab of the inside of their mouth so they know what kind of bone marrow they would have, so that when a young person or an older person says, I'm in need of a transplant in the next 90 days, they can find that person, get some bone marrow, and save their lives.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, Pat, I'll jump in here just because, you know, a lot of times we'll give commercials, and I love that we're doing this one now, but my wife and I currently have some friends whose 2-year-old had a bone marrow transplant. It was in need of one. And I just want to encourage people, don't wait until, you know, a tragedy happens in your
to be a donor
sphere of influence to go do something like this. Like the effect that you can have by just simply swabbing and being in their database is life-changing to somebody else.
Absolutely.
And our little buddy who is still fighting this thing, he got matched with a donor, and it gave the whole family new life around this fight.
Right.
And so don't wait till it affects you personally. Go out there and really actually check out Be the Match. Do get on the registry, make a difference for
someone. BeTheMatch.com. Now, Match, MATCH. The other thing is, most people that are good donors because of the turn out to be under 40. And so they need people in their 20s and 30s, especially. Mm-hmm. They also are really in need of African-American people that can do this because there's a shortage, and ethnicity sometimes has a lot to do with the person's
and whether it actually works. Yeah.
So here's the great news too. They're a fabulous organization. They're working really hard and they're really idealistic and they're all about passion to save lives. And so when you donate, you know that you're helping somebody and that they're going to make the most of that. So bethematch.com, we're going to do a commercial for them. Very worthwhile. I'm going to try to get my kids. Cody, you're young enough to do this.
We've got some swabs in the office. I'm getting on the registry.
Good. I wish we could do it. Jeff and I are a little on the older side, but we'll see.
We have good bone marrow though, so we might.
Just do it anyway.
We might be in need of it sometime.
Yeah.
All right. That brings us to the end of this show where we talked about the second part of clarity, which is your values. We first talked about, do you know why you exist as a company? Secondly, do you know how you behave? And if you don't know what your organization's core values are, then it's time to really look at this and find out those two or three things that you will never violate. You'll be relatively intolerant of it. It'll be the limits of your diversity, and it will make everything easier because you'll actually have a true, true personality as your organization.
Great.
Alrighty. Jeff, thank you for joining us here, our head of consulting. It's good when you're in the office and you can join us.
Love it. Thank you.
We'll have you again sometime. Cody? Yeah,
thanks, Jeff. Great having you.
All right. That's the end of our episode. We'll see you next week. And until then, I hope you have a great week and we'll look forward to talking to you again. God bless.